Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's music row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hey, y'all. Today we have one of the great innovators in popular music ever on the show. And I don't say that lightly. Missy Misdemeanor Elliott. This year is the 25th anniversary of Missy's certified classic debut album, Supa Dupa Fly. When that album first dropped, Missy's unconventional rhyme scheme and unique flavor, paired with her childhood friend Timbaland's futuristic production, set a precedent for what was creatively possible in hip-hop. And throughout her career, Missy's maintained that level of playful creativity. You can hear it on her slew of radio hits like Get Your Freak On, Work It, Lose Control, and definitely on her album cuts. As of this year, Missy has more platinum albums than any other female rapper. Of course, Missy can also flex as a producer and songwriter. She's the first female rapper to be inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, having written songs for Mariah Carey, Beyoncé, Destiny's Child, and of course, Aaliyah's biggest hits, One in a Million and If Your Girl Only Knew. Today, Rick Rubin talks to Missy Elliott about her wide-reaching influence and creative process. She explains what it was like writing for Aaliyah, who was one of the first artists to embrace Missy and Timbaland's unique style. She also talks about why she and Timbaland made a pact not to listen to any other music while recording her debut. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Here's Rick Rubin and Missy Elliott.
Hello, hello.
What up, legend?
Hello. What have you been listening to these days?
To be honest, nothing.
Really? Do you not listen to music regularly?
Well, you know, it's weird because I do listen to a lot of music, but a lot of it I catch it, especially when I'm starting to work on stuff, I go into this place of not listening to anything. And that's how I, you know, pretty much started when I first started, me and Tim, just like not listening. You know, we were forbidden to listen to other people's stuff or watch videos. And I think in a crazy way, that ended up working in our favor because we didn't see nor hear. So we ended up creating a sound that we didn't know we were creating. We just didn't know what was hot. So we didn't know what was hot to mimic it.
Great.
And I think that always works because then it allows you to not be so afraid to try something new because you don't know what's hot out there to know if yours is too far or not enough.
What about listening to classics?
Yeah, no, I know people get in my car and feel like they in the 80s and the 90s because I'm going to always play those joints. Like those classics, the timeless records will always stay in my car. I know my little cousins hate it. I know they hate it. They be like, don't you got the TikTok? Those are, nah, but listen to this. Listen to this 112 record. It's just something about it that warms my heart for whatever reason.
What was the music playing in your house when you were growing up? Was there music in your house when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. So the funny thing about when I was growing up, my mother was into gospel. And my father was into R&B, which, you know, in the gospel world, they say worldly music. So I had the best of both worlds because I had my mother playing gospel records. And then, you know, my father would be playing Marvin Gaye, Prince, Michael. Then he would go to Men at Work. I remember Whip It. You know, Grace Jones, whatever. Like so it was gospel on one side and R&B on the other side.
Did your parents listen to each other's music? Did your dad like the gospel and did your mom like the R&B?
No, absolutely not. That's probably why they didn't stay together.
I see.
No, my mother was really into gospel and I would be in my room and I'm the only child. So, you know, they would turn the music up on both ends. And when you come from a gospel world, you know, hearing R&B and especially Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing is like, what? You know, my mama was not having it. And my father didn't want to hear the gospel either. So it was like a DJ contest that I, you know, for whatever reason, it felt like that.
Do you feel like you were more influenced by hearing the R&B or the gospel?
I was influenced by both. I think I learned harmonies by listening to the gospel. I think I learned feeling by listening to the gospel. Something about gospel music just has a conviction when you hear the singers. The R&B side, there was a sauce that I learned from that. And lyrical content, love, you know, heartache, what's going on in the world. And so I think I had the best of both. Matter of fact, I know I did.
Amazing.
In a weird way. Being in the middle, in my room, hearing both sides, I was absorbing both like a sponge.
At the time, did you like them both? When you were a kid, do you remember liking them both?
As a kid, I feel like I did like them both because, you know, church, you go to church, you going to church Wednesday for prayer meeting, Thursday for choir rehearsal, Sunday, you know, it's like church. So you had no choice but to like that. And I liked it anyway, because I just come from a spiritual family. The R&B side, I loved. Like I stayed in the mirror mimicking these artists. And I would get in the mirror and I would make up these speeches that, you know, I was at the awards thanking Michael and Janet. I hadn't even met these people yet. I, you know, was like, thank you, Madonna, for letting me write records for you. I hadn't met none of them. And I was constantly doing that in front of my doll babies. So it was something about that I knew I was going to go in that direction.
Were your parents supportive of your interest in music, or did they laugh at you for, you know, thinking this is what you were going to do?
By the time I decided to become an artist, my mother and father had separated. My mother was trying to get me in the military. And I was like, I can't even walk from here to the car without getting tired. I know you don't expect me to go in nobody's Navy or Army and be running for my dear life. You know, so my family, they didn't take me serious because in Virginia at that time, artists wasn't going through Virginia like that. You know, maybe a show here or there. It wasn't like it is now. So it was hard to believe that I'm going to go away and I'm going to be famous. But I have been saying that since I was a little girl. Like, I remember in kindergarten, every Friday, the teacher would ask what we want to be. And I would listen to the kids say, I'm going to be a fireman. I'm going to be a policeman. I'm going to be a teacher. And I'm going to be a doctor. And it come around to me. And I'm like, I'm going to be a superstar. And the whole class would just bust out laughing. And I never wavered. Every Friday, yeah. I said the same thing. And they laughed every Friday. And I always wonder, do those kids remember me? Because I remember them. I remember them well. But yeah, my family, they didn't think that that could happen. And they didn't think it was best for me because I think they thought that I would be naive and go out there and be wilding out and get on all kind of situations that I had no business. So they didn't think it was good for me at first.
Tell me about growing up in Virginia. Just tell me about Virginia a little bit. Describe the place you grew up in, the area.
Virginia. I grew up in Portsmouth, Virginia. And everybody knew everybody.
Small town feeling?
Yes. Very small town. Like, you know, in New York, you may run into somebody and you may never see them ever again in life. Mm-hmm. In Virginia, you're going to, no matter whether you're from Virginia Beach, Hampton Roads, Newport News, Suffolk, Norfolk, in those places, you're going to run into them again. And, you know, in Virginia, everybody is just like family. You know, I remember a time where we can't do that now, but we used to go up to each other's house and just knock on the screen door and be like, coming in. We didn't lock our doors. And, you know, we all played together. And it just was a fun place growing up.
Was it more like the country or was it more like the suburbs, would you say?
Portsmouth was country. We had the dirt roads.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, we had the dirt roads, like mad woods. And yeah, we didn't see like paved roads like that. I used to stay in a place called Pewsville, and we didn't see that for a long time. Like, our roads were very rocky. Now, where Tim and Pharrell is from, they were kind of like the upscale in Virginia Beach. So they might have had paved roads. In Portsmouth, nah. When coming up, we had a lot of dirt roads.
I've only been to Virginia Beach one time, and that was to visit Teddy Riley in his studio back a while back.
Oh, the Future. And, I think it was Future Records. Yes. Do you know, I love Teddy. When I tell you, I love Teddy. And my group went to Teddy and sung for him. Like, we were so scared. We used to drive past his studio all the time. And we finally got up the nerve to go to his studio and sing. And it was maybe like five of us. And we sang, and he was like, I see five of y'all, but I only hear two-part harmony. I was like, no. And he didn't sign us. I was like, oh my God. It was like starting all over again because we had spent so much time working up the nerve to finally go to his studio because we used to always drive past and see all of these fly cars. And finally got in there. And he was like, I see five of y'all, but I only hear two-part harmony.
How old were you at that time? Do you remember?
We had to been 19.
Mm-hmm. How much did you record with the group?
Oh, we did a whole album. Yeah, I used to be in a group called Sister, which was signed to Jodeci. And we were signed under Sylvia Rhone.
Oh, cool.
And Sylvia Rhone let Devontae label go, which mean we got dropped to anybody that was under him. And then she came back and signed me as a solo artist.
Amazing.
Yeah. me and her always joke about that. It's like, you dropped me and then you signed me.
It all worked out. When the group ended, was it clear that you were going to do solo as opposed to either continue with the group or put together a new group?
I had no clue I was going to ever go solo. So the story behind that is I was in the group. We got signed. We went to a Jodeci show and we performed for Dalvin. And then Dalvin made us perform for KC. KC made us perform for JoJo. And then we ended up performing for Devontae. And so he said, hey, you know, I'm going to sign y'all. I'm going to fly y'all up to New York next week. We didn't believe him, but he really did. And so I signed with him and I kept telling him, hey, you know, I got this guy and he does all of our music. And I'm telling you, he is amazing. And his name is DJ Timmy Tim. And he was like, I don't care who he is. He say, you know, me and Albie Shore are going to do you all album. And I said, please, please, you know, bring him up here. Can I please bring him up here? And I begged and begged until he finally bought Tim. And then once Tim came, I said, hey, I got another friend. His name is Magoo. I promise he is so dope. He was like, you're not going to bring everybody from Virginia. And so I got them up there. So I ended up leaving and I was the first one to leave. And I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know what I was going to do. I had no plans or nothing. It was a scary thing because, you know, mind you, my family had already thought this was a bad idea. So I go somewhere and now I'm back at the crib. I'm home. And it's like, what are you doing here? I thought you was going away to be a star. And I'm like, no, I'm back. But before any of that, Magoo introduced me to Tim. So I know I'm going backwards, but we were in high school and Magoo, I always ask him, like, I don't even remember how I met Magoo, but it's so crazy. Magoo ended up giving me the name Misdemeanor because he said it was a crime for one to have as many talents as I had. And I stuck with that name. And he was just like, hey, I got this guy. And he actually didn't introduce Tim to me for work. It was really for us to just hang out. And so I went to Tim's house and he was a DJ. He didn't even understand his gift that he had. And when I got there, he was just, you know, scratching and stuff. He was dope as a DJ too. And then he had a little Casio keyboard and he started playing on the Casio keyboard. And I don't know if you remember Casios back then, they had the little dog sounds. And this is where I believe all of this sounds came from in the songs, because the Casio had those like ruff ruff and meow, just like animal sounds. And he found a genius way to make beats with that stuff in it. And he really at the time wasn't calling himself a producer at all. And one day he was just doing a beat on a Casio and I started rapping and he was like, yo, that's crazy. And I remember all of us being in the room and just going, just rapping. I went from rapping to singing, rapping to singing. And he just kept doing beats. And then Magoo would come in and we was having a cypher. And, you know, this was our pastime.
Yeah.
At the time, we didn't think, oh, we're going to go on to make records. We just was having fun. And every day after school, me and Magoo would get together and we started going to Tim's house and just started doing records. And we were recording from tape deck to tape deck. I don't know if you remember how people recording like that until the song sounded real fuzzy and muffled. But yeah, we was recording like that.
Like a pause tape?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So people don't the artists these days, they don't realize how good they got it. I say I have these reels in my house, and I'm trying to get them converted over. And I say these artists don't even realize these reels, what these reels was like cutting them, and all of this stuff is crazy.
It's funny now looking back, like it's easy now, but there was something about the limitations that we had back then that forced us to make more interesting things. You know, it just forced you to be creative.
Yes, absolutely. Because when you think about those reels, when you think about tape, recording from tape deck to tape deck, like I always wonder who came up with that. Like, who thought to do that and to be able to, I was able to put harmonies that way without us even having a studio. It's so crazy.
And you've worked with Tim from the beginning throughout your career, pretty much, yes?
Oh, yeah. From that day, that first day of going to Tim's house, and his dad hated when that doorbell would ring, because his dad, I think, drove trucks. And so he would be driving late at night, and he would just be fussing like, y'all got to go. Y'all got to get out of here. Making all that boom, bap. I got to drive. Like, he would be fussing us out. But we were so intrigued. It's so crazy when I tell you, I think back to just the beginning, like the first song that I ever heard. Because I heard Tim, I seen an interview with Tim not too long ago, and he was like, you know, Missy taught me so much. And it's funny because I learned so much just from the first song I remember, Donna Summer, Last Dance. And I said, at a young age, I was so intrigued at the structure of that record. And like, I was like, what made her start this slow?
Yeah, it starts slow and then it turns into a dance song, and you're not expecting it to turn into a dance song.
Yeah, like, and at a young age, that intrigued me that I hadn't heard a record do that. And till this day, that is a structure that I always say was just so amazing to me. That was the first record that caught my attention. So I always gravitated to things that probably people wouldn't have paid attention to. But then by the time I met Tim and we started getting into hip hop really crazy. Well, I was into hip hop before I met Tim, because, you know, I'm quite sure he was into it too around junior high school. We were, you know, in the UTFO, Run DMC days. But by that time, we was in the Public Enemy when I met Tim. And everything was Chuck D. Like, and Flav, everything was, yeah, boy, all day long. And we would just sit and listen to the 808s and stuff that they would have in their records and the breakbeats that they would use in Public Enemy records. And we was just always so amazed. We were most definitely in a tribe, and I always used to say, Magoo, you sound just like Q-Tip. And he'd be like, man, everybody tell me that. So those days really shaped us too, just in the whole hip hop culture. Like, we were so heavy into it.
We'll be right back after the break with more from Missy Elliott and Rick Rubin.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We're back with more from Missy Elliott.
Tell me about Tim as a person.
Tim. Timbaland. First, he was DJ Tummy Tim. So he was so quiet, a quiet genius. And what I always say about Tim and Pharrell just amazed me in two different ways. Tim, because he didn't play, he went off of feeling when he created music. Somebody that went to school probably would technically say these sounds put together are wrong. This is not in the correct key. But because he went off of feeling, if it was right, it was wrong, but it was right.
And it was new.
Yes. And, you know, we really showed people how to rap and sing over a cadence that hadn't existed before us. Mm-hmm. That cadence was so off to people. I remember One in a Million was hard to get played because a lot of people were saying, a lot of the program directors were saying that they couldn't mix it in or blend it in with the record before or after because of the rhythm of it.
Yeah.
And it was weird because although it was so slow, it still made you bounce in the weirdest way. Like all the songs that we did just had this bounce, even if they were slow records. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the genius in that, is that sometimes it's not just about just being technical, because I've had people who are amazing technically, but the feeling is not there. And so that's why I think Tim was always so great at what he did, because he went off of feeling. It felt right.
It's amazing that there was a time that was too unusual to, you know, to go on the radio, when it had so much of an effect in all music that came after it. Tell me the story of that song from the beginning. First time you heard the beat.
I was out working with 702, and Tim called me and was like, hey, you know, we got this opportunity to do something on Aaliyah. Now, you know, we still knew. Nobody really knows who we are. So when me and Tim got together, I'm like, Tim, you know, what we gonna do? Because she was already a superstar. So I'm like, yo, let's just give her our old sound. Nobody never heard it. So it'll be like a new sound. Because that sound was probably 4 years old to us.
Wow.
Because we had been signed and the stuff didn't come out. So we had been on that wave, that whole rhythm. And I said, let's just give her that. So Tim was like, you sure? I'm like, yeah, like, dude, that, you know, we were still in a place of we didn't know what was hot or not. All we knew is what we did.
Yeah.
You know, this is hot. Not knowing yes. It was really hot, but it was hot to us because that's all we had been hearing.
The song was already written. Tell me what you played her.
I mean, I played it for her after I had demoed the vocals. So because that's mm-hmm. me at the beginning saying love you, baby. Me and Tim went in and recorded it. And then I played her, you know, the version with my vocals on it. And mm-hmm. she loved it. And she got it immediately. Yeah. Which, when I think about it, it just shows that she was aligned with us musically anyway. Because we had to show people how to sing and rap over something that, like I said, that hadn't existed before. People didn't know where to place this music. They didn't know whether to go to the R&B and hip hop or to the pop. They didn't know where to place it. Uh-huh. But she got it immediately. But that actually wasn't the first record that she did. The first record she did was If Your Girl Only Knew. And even for her to get that record, and it went, we were only supposed to do one record on Aaliyah. And it went from one to two to three to four to five. Like, it just kept going.
Wow.
And she took a chance because she was Aaliyah already to the world. You know, she had the chance to be able to work with any major producer out there. And here we were, two young kids coming in with nothing really under our belts. And she just was like, I love what y'all doing. And she just kept recording each record that we would do. She'd be like, I want that one. Yeah, I love that. And she did it.
Typically, when you would write for someone else, would it typically happen like that? You would write it, do a demo of the whole song, and then present it to the artist? Or was it ever more collaborative than that?
No, I always wrote it and always demoed it. And then I started, as time went on, I started to get, I would write it and then I would get Jasmine or Tweet or somebody to demo for me. Mm-hmm. But actually, the one person I did have demo it early on one song was Gina Thompson. She demoed I Care For You for Aaliyah. But yeah, I would just go in there and write the songs and then demo it. And then I was not like, I didn't consider myself like a singer like that. I wasn't giving you no Whitney Houston notes. And so by me not being a singer, I would just kind of rap sing. And that's how, if you listen to One in a Million, it's like rap singing, because I wasn't a person who could do all of those runs and stuff like that. So I would just rap. Sing songs, and it just ended up being a new kind of rhythm too.
Have you ever written a song for someone else? Have they not do it, and then you end up doing it yourself? Has that ever happened?
No, I've never written a song for someone else, and then I ended up doing it. I always ended up giving it to someone else. Yeah, because mm-hmm. for me, I'm so critical on myself, like. That's probably been the hardest thing for me is once I do it for the artist, I have them in mind or artists in mind and not me. Cause I know when I do stuff for myself, it's always like some weird, crazy stuff. So I know that those artists probably be like, oh, nah, you bugging. So I've never taken a record that I had for somebody else and use it on myself. Mm-mm.
So when you say critical of yourself in that way, I want to understand it better. Is it that the song's not good enough for you, or that it doesn't suit your personality? Or if there's a song that you think is great, but that it's not right for you, that you wrote, what's the thought process?
Well, me as the artist, I do stuff so differently for myself that a lot of times it's so like out there. I couldn't imagine, you know, somebody else saying, don't you know, I could something I said in work, and I couldn't imagine somebody else saying some of the stuff that I've said. Not to say they wouldn't, but I just know like stuff that is more suitable for me. So when I do those records, they're more tamed down than what I would do for myself.
Yeah.
Because for myself, I'm taking a chance. I'm just like, you know, I'm going to say whatever, you know, I'm going to say she's a bitch. I'm going to say pussy don't fail me now and sing it. And, you know, these artists will probably be like, now, Missy, I do many things, but that nah. So I'm just different as the artist.
Yes. So your records tend to be more extreme and you could say lyrically harder or more challenging or crazier. It wouldn't feel right to give someone else a song like that expecting them to do it.
Yes. Even to this day. Like, it's a few artists that probably would do it just because I say, yo, I'm telling you, it's going to go, it's hot. But for the most part, I'm taking more of a risk on myself. So those records that I do for other artists, once I do them, I just say, hey, this will go to somebody, but just not me.
Mm-hmm. Who was the first artist that you, or the first group of artists that you looked up to and felt like, this is my inspiration. This is what I want to do. Who were the people that got you to want to do it?
Ooh, so many artists. The gospel, I would have to say the Clark Sisters. As far as R&B, Prince, Michael, Janet. When it comes to, you know, hip hop, I would go back to Roxanne, Queen Latifah, Light, Salt and Pepper, the reason I started rapping. LL, Big Daddy Kane, Public Enemy, Moni, all, you know, all of the hip hop mothers and fathers of this thing. Mm-hmm. I would say, to be honest, like the whole 90s for me, early 90s, really just like inspired me. But the 80s also, because I feel like the 80s, people were experimental with music. But Salt and Pepper is the reason that I started rapping. They are most definitely the reason.
We have to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more from Missy Elliott and Rick Rubin. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet, but you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We're back with the rest of Rick Rubin's conversation with Missy Elliott.
Tell me about your writing process. How does it start? What's the first thing that happens?
My writing process, a lot of times I could be riding down the street thinking of something. I listen to a lot of my friends' problems. Sometimes I'm just sitting and listening to a conversation and just pick up ideas and listening to what they going through. And then I'll get a track, and I'll already sing melodies in my, now that I, you know, we can do that on our phones, I'll sing melodies on my note thing on my phone.
Before there's even a beat.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then once I get a track, you know, I can adjust it to whatever track it is. Once I have the words and somewhat of a melody, I can adjust it to whatever track.
Is it all about the words, or could it be about the phrasing or the melody?
Ooh, sometimes it's depending on what the vibe is. Sometimes, you know, music, you may hear a track and I believe music speaks to you, you know, and kind of tells you. You can hear a record and you may hear a track and say, oh, these sound like sexy chords, and make you want to, you know, sing a song about sex. Or you may hear a song and it sounds like a motivational chords. I believe chords really do give you a place of feeling. But a lot of times when I'm just walking, sometimes I walk in a mountain and I'll just think of a melody. So the melody for me, a lot of times, be first. Cause sometimes I'll get on a mic and I'll just hum some stuff, and then the lyrics will come. Mm-hmm. I honestly was like, I had to just do a album where I'm just humming a bunch of gibberish just to show this is how a lot of people create that way.
Have you ever written a song with another person, like sitting together, looking at each other and writing a song together, or it's always each person does their own thing?
Last year was the first time in my whole career that I have collabed with a writer. I have written every last one of mine's, every last one of anybody else's I've done. Uh-huh. And at some point, you know, you just feel like, hey, it's good to just have some freshness coming in. Mm-hmm. You can't, at 90 years old, I'm still talking about, I'm finna write. I'm finna write for Cardi B. I'm finna write for Beyonce. Like, you got to know when it's like, okay, it's okay. It, you know, to bring in help, because I've done this, well, another 5 years, it'll be 30 years.
Yeah. 25 is a good number. 25 is a great number.
Yeah.
And congratulations on the anniversary of the first solo album. That's an incredible milestone.
And a funny thing, when I tell you that album, we did that album in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And we did it because I wanted to have my own record label so bad. And Sylvia Rhone said, the only way that I'll give you a record label is if you give me an album, give me one album. And I was like, Tim, come on, let's get her this album so I can get this label. So we did it out of like hurrying up. Like, I really wanted the label so bad. And it because at that time I had left and went back home. So I didn't want to be an artist anymore. And so we did it so quick. It was 2 weeks. And I was like, here. And from that album, it went on to the next album, the next album, the next album. But initially, it was just like, I just wanted a label. So that's how that album came about.
Fascinating. So in some ways, when you took a break in 2005, it's almost like that's how you wanted it to be from the beginning. And then just other stuff happened.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah. I love doing both, but I'm very shy, although it may not seem like it because I get to talking, but I'm very shy. So people have to understand, like, I started in a group. So to go from a group to a solo artist, you have to mentally already know that that's what you wanted to do. And that's not something that I came in this thing thinking. So I ended up being a solo artist, and everything, you feel like everything is on you now. You don't have, you know, other people that you could talk to when things go crazy. And then, you know, the second album became more stressful. The first album, I always tell people, you are at your most vulnerable. Like, you know, you don't care. Is you don't have nothing to compare it to. It's that second album that is going to give you that headache, because if your first album is successful, then you're chasing, trying to find the success of whatever record you put out that made that album go. You're trying to find that same style for that second album. And it just feel like, oh my God, like nothing is right. And I didn't even appreciate my second album until later, and realized that actually that album was a masterpiece, because we used a lot of theatrical loops and stuff in that album mixed with hip hop. But I didn't, I at that time, it was just like, ooh, that was a that was a headache. That second album was a headache, because it's scary. You know, it is a thing called sophomore jinx.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't want to be an artist, but now I'm in it. And so now I got to make sure I don't fail the second album. So that was hard.
But it worked out.
It most definitely worked out. But by the time my third album, we was having fun again. But I remember the third album, we were finished. Well, I didn't think we were finished. And Tim, he was like, I'm telling you, this album is solid. I was like, no, something is missing. And he was like, man, he was so mad at me, because I said, no, something is missing. So I said, just see what else you got in the keyboard. So he got on the ASR-10 and he started going down a thing, and he hit one of the things, and it was like, dun, 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 dun. And I'm like, yo, that was it. And he was like, what? Cause now he going so fast up and down the keyboard, he can't find it no more. So now he even more mad. Cause I'm like, yo, I'm telling you, I know what I heard. And so he hitting the keyboard all hard, cause he ready to go. Like, he's like, what? It ain't in here. I don't know what you talking about. So he finally hits it again. And I'm like, that joint is crazy. So when I rapped on it, it was only that sound and a kick.
Wow.
Because that's how Tim, a lot of times we would do stuff. He would, you know, it would just be like one sound and a kick. And then after I finished rapping, he would go and place all the other things around it. And so that's where you got all the spacey noise and stuff.
So good. That was a really common practice in the early days of hip hop, to leave a really long instrumental at the end so that other people could rap over it themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, just me sitting there listening actually to it just speaks to the genius in Timbaland too. Again, is the fact that he would make hip hop, those records, he would treat them like R&B records. If you really, like, when you get a chance, go back and listen. He was placing strings and different sounds. He was having a separation. It wasn't just a flat beat straight through. So he would add different sounds, like every four bars, he would put in another sound. When the hooks came, it would be strings. And he would do that to a lot of his records.
Absolutely. They never get boring. You never just get used to the groove. It always feels like, even if you're not paying attention, like, it really became clear after the vocals, all the changes that were going on in the music, because they're subtle. You know, they don't make you listen to them, but they have an effect on your subconscious that it feels like it's always evolving. It's always new.
Yeah, especially when you get to that end and you see how he starts to break it down. That's, I always say that too in that record, Is That Your Chick? He does that heavily in there too, but most of the records he did that. So when just listening now, because I never like listened to the end, made me just realize he treated those records like you would treat R&B records.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that spirituality plays a role in your music?
Oh, spirituality plays a role in Missy, period. In this industry, if I didn't have some kind of spiritual connection, I don't know how I could have made it. You know, in this industry, a lot of artists come in just thinking it's going to be, you're going to make a lot of money, you're going to be famous, you know, you're going to be hot forever and all of these different things. You know, that's what you come in thinking. And then you realize, oh, you've been duped. You know, I always tell people, you won't be hot forever. You can always have respect, though, because it'll come a time where even the hottest of the hottest won't be sitting at the top of the charts anymore. But the impact and respect will always be there. But spiritually, you have to have some, you know, for me, I feel like I had to have some kind of connection, because when those times come of those ups and downs like that, you have to be able to, you know, I come from a praying family. So being that I feel like God gonna work it out. If I didn't have that, I don't know how I would be able to manage, because there has been way ups and then there has been way downs. And that's a lot, especially if you're coming from way up, you know, and a lot of artists, people don't prepare artists for that. And that's, you know, a lot of times where you may get a lot of artists deal with mental health issues because they came in and nobody prepared them for those different ups and downs.
Regardless of what's hot and what's not hot, and or even doing it professionally, do you feel like on any given day you could write a song that you would love? You could always do that. Is it something that you feel confident in, or is it a moving target, would you say?
Oh, I feel like I'm gonna always make some joints that I love. That's, you know, I always feel like that I haven't wavered from. Now, whether the people feel the same is a whole nother, you know, you just don't know.
That's their problem. They just might not know. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, you don't know what the people will feel, but I always say I'd rather do something that I believe in, and if it don't work, then I can still sleep good, opposed to do something that, let's say, if the label say, hey, this the one, and I don't feel like that, and then it don't work, and I'm kicking myself in the ass for the rest of my life. So, you know, a lot of times if I do something and if it don't work, I just be like, hey, maybe this, you know, I do understand, and not to be bragging, but some people are ahead. And I do understand that some things may be ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of what makes you you, and that's why you're in the role that you're in, and it's why you were very early in the movement, and you felt it early.
Yeah.
I'm sure not everybody felt it at the time that you felt it.
Oh, absolutely not. I remember, like, when I did She's a Bitch, and I remember Puff hitting me like, Money, what are you doing? When he seen that bald head, he was like, what? Yo, Money, what are you doing? Like, so,
it's so funny.
So, you know, at that time, we didn't even think about, like the way we are now, we're probably more open to just playing stuff and seeing what people think. We didn't do that then. We came in saying, okay, this is going to be the first single, and then we're going to come with this. We wasn't playing it for somebody to tell us if it was hot or not. We was playing it because we thought it was hot.
Exactly.
And as time went on, your confidence can either build, or, you know, it could stagger, or it could just go to nothing. And I think as time went on, we probably started to ask people. But then I got to a point that I'm just like, nah, I just want to do music that feels good to me. And I've done, you know, just like you are legendary at this point. you probably doing it like, I'm just having fun. There was a time where you may have felt like you was concentrating on making this kind of music or timeless. Or you're not even thinking like that now. Mm-hmm. You're like, I done proved myself. What? I'm having fun. I'm going to take two spoons and hit on this trash can and throw this out because it feel good to me right now. While you have proven yourself time and time again. And what's the use of doing music if you can't have fun with it?
Absolutely. I've always tried to make music that I like and never question what anyone else is going to think, because I can't imagine what anyone else is going to think. And at least if I'm true to what I like, at least I know some one person likes it. You know, it's better than making something that maybe nobody likes. Like, I'm making the thing that I like and I care about it. That's all I could do.
Absolutely. I said, just think if there was one person in the room, if I always say Michael and Quincy or whoever else was in that room when they were creating Thriller, mm-hmm. they all had to be aligned in the same space. Because if one person had been like, what? It's close to midnight. Something evil is there. What kind of song is this? It could have threw them all the way off and made them trash that record. But they was all aligned in that room where they had to be like, visually, they was in the same place. I see it. I hear it. This going to be huge. And those are the type of people that I try to, you know, keep around. Not just yes, ma'am, people, you know. If something is truly whack, I want my friends to be like, yo.
Absolutely.
That's whack.
Absolutely. Otherwise, you're living in a world of not reality. Like, you have no idea. It's like, I want to make something that I like, and if someone else doesn't like it, it's cool, but I want to know if they don't like it. It's just so I understand the world, you know?
Right, right. But yeah, I mean, you are such a legend, and people dream to get to that place, and you have an impeccable ear. So I know that, you know, when you have an ear like that, you would have to be 120 for anybody to be like, nah. If you was to say, even at 90, you'd be like, nah, that ain't it. I'm going to believe it.
But I feel like you're exactly the same. We've both been doing it long enough where we, you know, it's like, it's obvious. We know what we're doing. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah. I most definitely probably had a few producers mad at me when I'd be like, nah, that ain't it.
Good. That means you care and you're honest, you know, like that's part of the job too. It's not just going along with it.
Yeah. You know, especially in this time when you've been around for so long though, but then you may get some younger ones that come in and be like, nah, you don't know what you're talking about. This, I'm telling you, this what everybody listened to. And that's the great thing about, I think, what we have done is we created something in yourself that hadn't been done. And so you are in a position to be able to say that, because you wasn't following what everybody else was doing. Mm-hmm. And if you can teach any upcoming producers, like, hey, you know, you stand out. Because at the end of the day, you don't want it to be five of yous. Because if you got five of yous, then most of the time the label gonna go with the cheapest one anyway. So you better hope you the cheap one, because otherwise you're not gonna be picked. Like, it's gonna be easy for them to go with the one that is, you know, popping right now. So you better mm-hmm. off just trying to do something that will be game changing. And game changing, you don't get a lot of those. Like, you can count those. It ain't a lot of game changers.
It's true. Thank you so much for speaking to me. This was beautiful.
I thank you. And hopefully we will see each other. But it's been fun. And I appreciate you. Just know that you are legendary and will continue to be. And it was an honor speaking to you.
The honor is all mine. Thank you so much. And we speak soon. And hopefully I get to see you and give you a big hug. And thank you, person.
Yes. Well, you enjoy yourself and be safe out there.
Thanks to Missy Elliott for talking through her career with Rick and sharing insight into her creative process. You can hear all of the songs mentioned in this episode, along with the rest of her now 25-year-old album, Super Duper Fly, on a playlist at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. Next week, we kick off a month-long slate of interviews Rick Rubin did with the Red Hot Chili Peppers to commemorate the release of their newest album, Unlimited Love. This is the Peppers like you've never heard them before, and trust me, you don't want to miss it. The first episode comes out Friday, April 1st, the same day as the album. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/BrokenRecordPodcast, where you can find all of our new episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Broken Record. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Ben Tolliday, Eric Sandler, and Jennifer Sanchez. Our executive producer is Mia LaBelle. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you like this show and others from Pushkin, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and uninterrupted ad-free listening for $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like the show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond. Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today. The tradition of breaking tradition continues with the return of the Unconventional Awards from T-Mobile for Business at Mobile World Congress. This is an event that celebrates innovators whose bold actions took their industries to new places. If that sounds like you and you're a T-Mobile for Business customer, enter today. If you win, you'll be publicly honored among some of the most influential leaders in industry. And me, I'll be there too. Enter now at T-Mobile.com/unconventional awards. See you there.